Well, I'm going to call the...
Thank you. I'm going to call the State Government Finance Committee for February 11, 2015 to order. If I could have a motion to move the minutes?
So moved.
So Representative Anderson moves the minutes for February 10th of 2015. All those approve, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. So what I'd like to do is when we, as we continue the presentation of the governor's budget here, is I'd like to try and keep us on time. We'll just let the presenters present, and then we'll ask questions at the end if that's okay with everybody. So at this time, we'll have the Council on Black Minnesotans. If Mr. McDonald, looks like you're all ready to go, I appreciate that. If you could introduce yourself for the record, and please begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of this esteemed committee. My name is Edward McDonald. I'm the Executive Director of the Council on Black Minnesotans. I know you're pressed for time, and Mr. Chairman, I had prepared a packet for members of some information I just want to pass around and realize that we didn't do enough. And I will bring some more to staff to give to other members that don't have a copy. In the packet, Mr. Chair, is our African Heritage Capital Report. It looks at the assets of Minnesotans of African heritage. I think the information would be informative for members. When we often talk about disparities, one of the things that we like to look at the Council of Black Minnesotans, that when the first African heritage people arrived here in Minnesota, they literally had nothing. But today we enjoy $4 billion in consumer spending. We own and operate nearly 15,000 business enterprises that generate nearly $1 billion in sales, employ close to about 15,000 people. Ranked as a group, they would be the 21st largest corporation in Minnesota. We contribute nearly $250,000 in local and state sales taxes. And the future bode well for us. We use that asset-based approach to define our strategies to see how we can grow and become stronger contributors to the great state of Minnesota. Also in the packet is some information on a rally for adoption and foster care program, the governor's budget recommendation, and a change item. Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do, because I know the committee has heard from a lot of folks that have put the councils under constant audit, which is a good thing, and we use that information to analyze our approach and try to strengthen our operations, ensure that we are complying with our mandates. We've prepared a four-minute video that give the committee and others an opportunity to take a look at the kind of work we do, and I'd like to show that and then reaffirm our support for the governor's recommendation, but also ask the committee to consider increasing our budget by 3 full-time staff so that we can effectively operate in our outstate communities, which are growing in their diversities. We would like to hire staff and operate offices in St. Cloud, Duluth, and Mankato. We currently, based on cost savings and being efficient with our resources, we have opened an office in Rochester that's yielding great results in helping particularly the African immigrant community assimilate in that community and becoming a more positive contributing a group in that region of the state. So I'd like to, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, to proceed with the video, and then I'll be open for any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. Please roll.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Patlin Lawrence, Board Chair of the Council on Black Minnesotans. The Council on Black Minnesotans was created in 1980 by the Minnesota Legislature to ensure that people of African heritage fully and effectively participate and equitably benefit from the political, social, and economic resources, policies, and procedures of the state of Minnesota.
This video provides a year in review. We represent more than 320,000 Minnesotans of African heritage, of which 25% are recent immigrants of Africa. We are headquartered in St. Paul and operate one outstate office in Rochester with plans to open three more in Duluth, Mankato, and St. Cloud. We support the state of Minnesota's statewide outcome to build strong and stable families and communities, which aligns with our motto of moving beyond tolerance to allophilia. Allophilia is having a positive attitude for a group that's not one's own.
The council must achieve several legislative mandates. They are to advise the governor and legislature on issues confronting black people and on statutes or rules that benefit black people. Recommend to the governor and the legislature any revisions in the state's affirmative action program. Serve as a conduit and referral agency to the state government for organizations of black people. Perform studies in the areas of education, employment, human rights, health, housing, social welfare, and implement programs. Provide the Commissioner of Human Services recommendations on the out-of-home placement of black children, and to publicize the accomplishments of black people and their contributions to the state. The council is governed by 17 board of directors, 13 members appointed by the governor, and 4 appointed by the legislature.
Hello. Financially, the Council on Black Minnesotans is funded primarily through general fund appropriation and grant opportunities. For the biennium, we received about $400,000 a year to perform our work statewide. We also received $100,000 through an interagency agreement to assist the Department of Human Services. This was to recruit African heritage residents to provide kinship, foster care, and or adoptive services for children under the guardianship of the commissioner. 70% of our annual budget is spent on compensation for 4.5 staff, and the remaining 30% is used for operating costs. We are currently carrying a $30,000 surplus. We utilize community-driven research and decision-making to ensure civic engagement activities and develop programs and policies that address community concerns.
The Council had several other large-scale achievements in 2014. The Council on Black Minnesotans began the fiscal year with a Cultural Relations Summit and ended the year with an Economic Development Summit. In between, we conducted 12 community gatherings and administered a community concern survey. We published reports and white papers on minimum wage, impact, and education. Two opt-ins on human rights and mobilized 1,000-plus people to the Capitol during the legislative season to support 12 legislative bills drafted by the council to support housing, urban agriculture, jobs, economic development, health care, education, criminal justice, and human rights in an effort to eradicate socioeconomic disparities and to guide the governor's office and the legislative leaders' work on the concerns of our community. Those are just a few of our many achievements this year.
We've served on several task forces and committees, including the Department of Human Services Federal TANF Waiver Task Force and Cultural Committee to End Disparities, the Department of Corrections Federal Grant Committee to Reduce Recidivism, the Minnesota...
...to be being the voices and the eyes and the ears of these populations who still are afraid of government to some extent, right? But I often talk about my elders and my communities in the way of, you know, when you look at a grove of bamboo shoots, you know, maybe like the last tiger that is about to go extinct, when you see in between those bamboo shoots, that tiger represents the hope that my elders and my communities that make up the Asian American community have when it comes to the role to government. There's the flip side of fear is a faint touch of hope. And the council's role is to identify and see when that hope shows up and then to leverage it and to bring them into the folds of mainstream Minnesota.
Thank you. If we can keep these kind of short, but Representative Johnson, your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More comment. I mean, I really appreciate the advisory role you give to the to me as a legislator on the issue of domestic violence that Representative Runbeck brought up. For example, I wasn't aware that domestic violence or that women reported sexual violence at a rate more than twice that occurred in the white community, and that is helpful information that we need to deal with in a very direct way. I wasn't aware that Asian Pacific Islanders are the most trafficked group in the United States, and that's an important issue we need to address, and it's through the advice of your council that we'll become aware of that. So I thank you for that, and I think that's an extremely important role here at the legislature.
Thank you. Representative Carlson?
I'll pass in the interest of time.
Thank you. Well, thank you for that presentation, and we'll look forward to it. We'll be addressing that. So next we'll have up the Department of Human Rights, and hopefully I'm by looking at the slideshow, you can kind of pick and choose and kind of flow through this very quickly, because in the interest of time, we're definitely getting beat up by the clock here. So members, if you keep that in mind with your questions and keep that in mind as a response. So if you could introduce yourselves for the...
Sure, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kevin Lindsay. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. I believe in your material packets you received a handout from the respective department. Let me go to the second page where it talks about the Human Rights Act and it identifies the three duties within the Act. Issuing complaints of discrimination and federal analogous statutes have an attorney's fee provision, which means in the private marketplace that a lot of the charges that have merit probably don't end up with the department. They're either filed by the private marketplace either in state court or in federal court. If you take a look at the findings of state courts and federal courts as relates to determinations which go all the way to jury trial and result in a favorable verdict, it's around 30%. So to the extent that we're seeing 20%, that seems or feels about right as someone who has practiced since 1991 as relates to the respective inventory of charges which would come before the department. Let me be very clear about one other thing about the charges which come before the department. This is a way in which to provide individuals with limited financial resources an opportunity to get meaningful justice. So it does not cost anything for an individual to file a charge with the Department of Human Rights. It allows the Department of Human Rights to provide some type of investigation into the facts and also allows, hopefully, an opportunity to settle the dispute before it gets to the point in which it has to go into either state or federal court. Most of the individuals who come and file charges with the file a charge of discrimination with the department could not afford an attorney. There are some which are filed with the assistance of an attorney, but those are vastly the minority of charges which are filed with the department. Pages 6 and 7, the takeaway here is in the 4 years prior to me becoming commissioner, the department closed about 1,072 cases. In the past 4 years, we have closed over 2,300 cases. There was no additional funding provided to the department as it relates to investigating charges of discrimination. We have reorganized, we have provided additional training, we have really kind of sharpened the proverbial pencil to become more effective. And hats off to the folks within the department. The governor has recognized the respective work of the staff as relates to the initiatives that they have taken on to become more efficient. We collaborate with the EEOC, the St. Paul Human Rights Department, so to the extent that something could be investigated by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, we are in communication and dialogue with them, so there's no duplication of respective effort. And that same communication occurs with the St. Paul and Minneapolis Human Rights Department. Let's go to page 8 as it relates to Ban the Box. This new law came into effect at the start of the year. We have initiated 85 investigations. We've worked diligently with the Council on Crime and Justice. We are all criminals to get the word out as it relates to the challenges which impact individuals who have a criminal conviction, but also to provide information to employers who are interested in providing second chances. And kudos to the employers within the state of Minnesota who've been willing to engage in that conversation with these applicants. We have found that employers have been very interested in trying to figure out strategies which make sense for them in this respective issue. Bottom of page 8, and then going over to page 9, these executive orders, I think, are very important. The tribal consultation policy in our conversation with the 11 tribal nations, the issue of sovereignty and the recognition within the executive order is something that they feel very passionate about, and they're very happy that the state of Minnesota is positioning itself to have a real dialogue sovereign to sovereign as it relates to the tribal nations. We have been trying to help to facilitate that conversation with the administrative agencies which comprise the governor's cabinet. The executive order on diversity and inclusion, carrying over to page 10, Olmstead. These efforts, I think you heard a little bit as it relates to the respective ethnic councils, and that is facilitating dialogue on public policy matters to address issues which impact their respective communities. We are a member of the interagency task force. We really seek to facilitate communication to historically disenfranchised communities, but then also use our expertise as relates to the federal laws which impact the implementation of program services and obligations of the state. As we go to page 11 and 12, these interagency initiatives on homelessness, reducing recidivism, and workforce development. Homelessness, I just caught the tail end of the comments by the Council on Black Minnesotans. Our research into the issue of homelessness, more than half the individuals are in the state of Minnesota are people of color, and then also have an issue as relates to mental health. There's also an increased number of veterans who are homeless. The interagency effort has really sought to work with the ethnic councils and also the veteran community to make sure that we address that first and foremost in dealing with homelessness. And I applaud Commissioner Tingerthal's efforts leading that. Reducing recidivism, we have been partnering with the Department of Corrections as relates to their efforts to reduce recidivism, bringing in some of the things which we have learned from employers in our conversations with Ban the Box. It's really tried to be very intentional on collaboration, which then lastly brings us to workforce, aligning some of the efforts with Indeed, within MinSCU, within unions, within businesses, which we are hearing, and then also trying to partner with them to figure out strategies which can develop the workforce going forward for the state of Minnesota to best position us. The budget itself, the recommendations here, really implementing successfully the executive orders, the new initiatives, the new things which have been given to the respective department. This is really to help support those respective initiatives going forward. The 1.8 increase, that is sort of an salary adjustment from a COLA perspective as it relates to negotiations with collective bargaining. And I hope, Mr. Chair, that was enough of an overview for you. And I'll stand for any questions for the committee.
I believe Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, you were talking about the 1.8% increase. Does that include the pay raise that Governor Dayton gave to you? Is that included in that number, or do you have that somewhere else in another budget request that will be coming forward at a later time?
Chairman Anderson or Chairman Howe? Is it
Commissioner?
At this point in time, should I refer to Chairman Anderson?
Just address the chair.
Always, okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it does not include that. Does not include my salary within the 1.8.
And Mr. Chair?
Chair Anderson.
Commissioner, are you going to be coming forward with a later request then to pay for that amount, or where are you getting the funds then to pay for the pay raise? Is that coming out of programming, or where does that come from?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I believe that you have exchanged correspondence with the governor as it relates to it. So I assume that you could take up that respective issue with him, but as it relates to the respective budget, which is before this committee, there is no line item as it relates to a pay raise for me with him.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner, so you're suggesting that the governor speak to this issue then directly?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, sure. I believe I've answered the question as it relates to, you put it, concerning the 40, the amount as it relates to the raise that I received. It's not within this respective budget. I know that there are other questions, conversations that you have been having with the governor, and those are probably best between yourself and him.
Well, Mr. Chair, or I'm sorry.
Chair Anderson, go ahead.
I'll certainly do that. Hopefully he'll be able to provide those answers. Commissioner, I do have some questions about your other change item that you have in here. You, in your budget request, or I should say the governor's budget request, he is asking for, an additional 10 FTEs. In the description, it talks about that this is going to be adding to a workforce of currently 40 FTEs. However, if you look at the documents prior to that that describe your agency and what you have, it shows that you guys at this point only should have 31.7, probably about 31.6. So I'm trying to rectify the numbers. Do you currently have 40 FTEs, or do you currently have only 31.6? And the numbers vary from every single page. I mean, there's a different number on page 3, there's a different number on page 4, and then there's a different number on page 6. And we're having problems in going through the budget items as prepared by the governor's administration because the numbers aren't adding up. They're not. So can you tell me what is the correct number? Is it 40? Is it 31? Is it 33? What's the correct number of FTEs that you currently have?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think there's two things which are going on. One is it relates to the snapshot, which is taken by the Office of Minnesota Management and Budget, and that number is sort of generated and provided to the legislature. Then there's also the issue as it relates to turnover, which may happen within the respective department as well. So there's always going to be the possibility for a variance of a number of one or two.
Okay. And Mr. Chair and Commissioner, but we're talking about a difference of 10 FTEs, and so that's what I'm trying to rectify. I could see if it was just a little bit. So if you can, you don't have to answer it now because I know the chair is short on time, but if you could get back to me and just tell me what the real, if we should be going off of the 40, if we should be going off of the other numbers, that would be helpful for me.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, we will follow up.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, I probably the only person on this committee, maybe the only person in the legislature who successfully filed an anti-discrimination claim. And one of the important parts of that claim, which was just brought to attention by the recent death of the chief attorney in that case, and you people may be more familiar with the movie North Country, which was his second class action case. And the most important part of that, it turns out, was taking individual cases and making them into a class action case. Because the result of it was then not just satisfaction for the individual, but then a complete constraint and following of the practices that this is the University of Minnesota, and the case was called the Regenda case, which is one of the it wasn't called the Kahn case. I was only a plaintiff intervener in the case, and the because I decided to go into, I didn't have the energy to be the major person after I went into the legislature. But the importance of that being a class action case was just critical you know, not only in the state but also nationally. So what are you doing in terms of looking at cases that should be done as class action case? And the reason we went to a private attorney, you know, again, I was not the lead person on this, was and in fact, when we had filed EEOC complaints, and at that point they were trying to put all of them into the state human rights department. At that point I was already in the legislature and said it was certainly inappropriate for mine to go to the human rights department because I sat on the committee that looked at their budget, so they kept that one in the federal government. And what happened was that every year someone would call me from EEOC and talk about the case and the aspects of the case and what kind of science should be taught and that sort of stuff. Finally, one year somebody said, you know what this case looks like? It looks like someone picks it up every year as we're required to and looks at it and decides that there are easier cases in the file to look at and puts it right back. And so that, and that happened until it was made part of a class action case. So my question, sorry with that long personal prologue, but my question is, what are you doing about trying to integrate cases to be class action cases?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it is a delicate balance as relates to whether something should be examined as relates from a class standpoint, whether it should be individual and education. And we do take those factors into consideration deciding how to proceed in a particular matter. I'd be more than happy to meet with you at some point in time and talk about those respective issues.
Well, you know, something that might be a little simple is just how many times have you taken cases and made them into a class action case? Well, I know you're not responsible for the whole history of the department, but how many times has the department done that?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it also begs the question as relates to a class action. So there's a part of me which would say the technical term as relates to understood under the Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure and the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. But there's also a more common one which I would say, and that is where we have multiple plaintiffs and we try to implement something which has a positive impact for individuals going forward. And I'll give you an example of that, where we had the Salvation Army case in which they had implemented a policy which had a negative impact on individuals applying for and being sustained within it. We had an individual who came to us, and in the course of investigation, we heard about other individuals. We then had a conversation with the employer, and we found out that 18 individuals were impacted by it. It actually didn't result in a formal charge. We resolved the respective issue for all 18, and then we worked with the employer to implement a policy which would not have a disparate impact going forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And if when you respond with those FTE numbers, if you could respond to the whole committee so we could all get a good perspective on that, I think that would be appreciative. And thank you for your presentation. I think we got another. I guess Representative Anderson's got the last question of the.
Thank you for the last question, Mr. Chair. Mr. Commissioner, maybe you could help me with something. This goes back to Representative Anderson's talk about the adding 10 more FTEs on here. Reading in the book here, it says, over the past 4 years, the department has dramatically, and that's a big word to me, improved its ability to investigate complaints. Now, I'm assuming that that's because, you know, the department has learned to handle these a little bit better, streamlined, efficiency, all these wonderful buzzwords. Well, that being the case, I would think that the workload through this efficiency wouldn't need an additional 10 FTEs to justify a 24% increase, which to me is a really big number. Can you explain that to me?
Sure. Representative Anderson, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, most of the charges which come before the department, the language which is spoken by the individual is English. The department, when I became commissioner, had very few, if any, bilingual enforcement officers. So when I have been out and about throughout the state of Minnesota, I see the amazing diversity which is going on within the state. And I also see a language diversity issue. So I don't think the department is really well positioned to be able to say that it is adequately hearing
the respective issues and concerns of all the diverse communities within the state. And so to your point as relates to why these FTs are important, it's important for us to have additional bilingual individuals within our office to ensure that we are addressing the issues of all Minnesotans.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I have just one very brief question in regards to page 5 under the investigations. If I read that correct, or am I reading it correctly, that about 80% of the charges filed led to either findings of no discrimination or were dismissed? Is that correct?
Representative, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you are reading that correctly.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner. And members, you know, I hate to do this to my good friends over there at the MDVA, but I think we're going to have to reschedule for another time. And thank you for your presentation. We'll look forward for that information about the FTEs. And we're gonna adjourn the meeting. So without any...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're going to have to reschedule. Just to give you time to do proper and to do it right, we're gonna close a little bit early here. I'm not going to challenge you to try and get through. Looking at your slide pack, I don't see that we're going to be able to do justice in 10 minutes, so we're just going to close early here. And Representative Johnson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, will that be tomorrow then? We're going to hear that, or you're not?
No.
Will we see you later? No.
It'll be later. It won't be tomorrow. You. So at this time, State Government Finance is adjourned.